From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it's War of Will coming down to the 16th pole in front. In front by 2 lengths late. A late charge from Longshot Everfast in the inside two, but nothing stood in his way. War of Will won the Preakness.
Bricks and Mortar bumps with March to the Arch, nonetheless closing in with 2.5 lengths to make up and a 16th to go. It's Curbon in front, Clyde's Image. Bricks and Mortar finding stride late in the game, and Bricks and Mortar's up in time.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Leora and Channing Hill on the outside of Serengeti Empress, who digs in toward the rail. It's these two, Lidiapolis Third, the others with plenty of work to do. It's down to these two and Serengeti Empress, who's holding off the challenge of Leora as they come down to the line. Serengeti Empress has taken the Kentucky Oaks.
And Vino Rosso edging away from Gift Box. He's coming into his own. And Vino Rosso at age 4 goes on to win the Gold Cup at Santa Anita.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning and welcome to the Equine Forum presented by Woodbine Entertainment here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, alongside retired top trainer and current pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, Lee Delapina, our producer, and Chanel Cacho are back running the show in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. They are there. We are here at Woodbine Racetrack in Toronto, Welcome to Queen's Plate Day, the 160th Queen's Plate, coming up later this afternoon, and it is an absolutely spectacular morning here in the Toronto area. Going to be a great afternoon, too, with temperatures heading to the upper to mid, mid to upper 70s, I guess is what the forecast is calling for. Plenty of powder blue skies overhead, plenty of sunshine. Horses are training on the main track now. Of course, the main track here at Woodbine is the Tapeta surface. It's located inside of the turf course. The Tapeta is where they will run that Queen's Plate later today. And JT, we are positioned high above the finish line in our new broadcast location, and thanks to the folks here at Woodbine for getting us set up. We are above the finish line in the press box, looking straight out at the main track, the turf course, and the new inner turf course, which is inside of that Tapeta surface, and straight across at that gorgeous view of the Toronto airport. It is truly spectacular here this morning.
Yeah, it's a fantastic day, and it's going to be quite warm. The folks here in Toronto are very happy about the weather. I guess they were tired of winter time. Everybody's got their Hawaiian shirts and shorts out. It's really a unique experience because usually it's a little chilly when you come up here, but not this trip. Everybody's enjoying the sunshine.
I remember last year. You didn't make the trip last year. You were out of town, so you couldn't make it up here, but it was hot here in Toronto, 10 degrees hotter than it was in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, when we hit the air for our Queen's Plate broadcast.
Yeah, well, it's much the same this year, and it's a gorgeous day. It really is.
This is the oldest continuously run race in North America, the Queen's Plate dating all the way back to 1860. If for some reason you are not familiar with what the Queen's Plate is all about, it is the equivalent of the Kentucky Derby here in Canada. The race is restricted only for Canadian-bred three-year-olds, and Jude run at the same distance, mile and a quarter, of the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, it's a very unique race, and just the signature race of Canada. Everybody knows what the Queen's Plate is, and of course, if there's a king, it's called the King's Plate. But Queen yeah. Elizabeth has a stranglehold on this one. she's been queen for a long time, and it's been the Queen's Plate for seems like forever.
They call the Kentucky Derby the Run for the Roses. This is the Gallop for the Guineas. They don't award you guineas if you win the race anymore, but at one time that was the practice.
Yeah, that was the original prize. I think it was like 60 guineas.
Yeah,
the purse. So it's a cool race and has a tremendous history. And as you look back on the horses that have won it, a lot of great horses, a lot of champion horses.
Hard to beat history when you talk about not only the Queen's Plate but racing here in Canada. This is the 252nd year that they have been racing horses here in this country. On Monday, they're going to celebrate Canada Day for the 152nd time. So it's not only about the Queen's Plate this weekend every time you come here. It's more about, yes, it's about the horses, yes, it's about that race, but it's also about the festival and Canada Day and celebrating this country's great tradition and great history.
Yeah, it's a fabulous country. The people are so wonderful. I mean, we've had nothing but great experiences here over the years, and you know, this year's no different. Everybody from the people that work at the hotels to everybody here at Woodbine, just very welcoming and helpful and friendly. Nobody has a scowl on their face. Everybody's anxious to get you what you need.
Post time for the Queen's Plate is 5:36 Eastern. Our coverage comes your way at 4 o'clock Eastern time. We'll bring you 2 hours of coverage, which means you're also going to hear the Dance Smartly Stakes and the Grade 1 Highlander, which precede the Queen's Plate. We'll have that live coverage for you coming up this afternoon. Coverage presented by TwinSpires.com and by our friends at Hillendale Farm, and really appreciate all the support and their help in making this broadcast possible. Jude, usually we are positioned on the apron in a, well, it's a stage with a pop-up canopy with sides, kind of a little bit of a tent set up right about the eighth pole. Not the case this year. I mentioned we moved up to the press box. One of the reasons for that is because they are doing a lot of construction here at Woodbine, and it is going to be spectacular when this project is completed. Going to take a while, but they're building a hotel down by where we used to be. It's just past the end of the grandstand going toward the top of the stretch. That hotel, they tell me, is going to be situated right there at the top of the stretch so that you can come out onto your balcony outside your room and sit there and watch the races. How cool will that be?
Yeah, that'll be cool. We'll have to ask Jim Lawson if he wants to put up a plaque that this was the former location of the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Would it have R.I.P. next to it? R.I.P.H.R.N.?
quite possibly. But this is a lot easier to watch the races and broadcast from, as long as we don't disturb the members of the press. But there's enough beer up here. I think we'll be okay.
14 horses will go to the post later today. Again, all three-year-olds, all bred in Canada. The favorite, Avi's Flatter, for Josie Carroll, one of two for the Hall of Famer. She's won the race twice already. She'll be looking for three. And I say Hall of Famer, Jude, because she will be inducted into the Hall of Fame in August. Josie took the time to talk with myself and the godfather, Tony Attiano, who filled in for you last week. And not only is it about Avi's Flatter, who hasn't had a race in a couple of months, but she told us why last weekend on the program. It's also about He's a Macho Man, who she feels could be her sleeper in the race.
Yeah, and he's an interesting horse. He's won two races in three starts, and the other start he had a lot of trouble. That was at Gulfstream in an allowance race, and he hit the side of the gate and just had a terrible trip. So she's kind of throwing that one out. And Patrick Husbands rides today. He's one of the perennial leading riders here, has had a tremendous career at Woodbine, and that's a feather in his cap as well. So, yeah, why not? We've seen the other horse win on the Derby Trail and other places this year. So she's got two shots at it.
Fans in the United States, especially in the bluegrass, are going to be familiar with Avi's Flatter because Josie sent that talented three-year-old, Canada's champion two-year-old male from a year ago, sent him to Keeneland to win the Grade 3 Transylvania Stakes earlier this year. Was sixth in the American Turf last time out at Churchill. And as I mentioned, that was his last start. But Josie said that was somewhat by design.
Yeah, well, you know, things just didn't set up right for him.
Yeah, not ideal, but by design, the way they had to go.
Yeah, well, you know, she was concerned about the spacing of the races, and there wasn't really a spot that she thought fit into his program, so she decided, what the heck, I'm a Hall of Fame trainer, I'll just train him up to it.
And who can doubt her? She knows how to win this race and get a horse ready to go a mile and a quarter.
She didn't say that. I'm paraphrasing here. I'm making it up as I go along. But basically, that was it. She decided that the training him was better than running him, and she wouldn't have to make as many adjustments.
We're going to spend a lot of time talking about that Queen's Plate as we move throughout the program. We're going to hear from jockey Sandy Hawley, who has won four Queen's Plates, the Hall of Famer, last won it in 1978 with Regal Embrace. He took the time to visit with former jockey Jerry Olguin yesterday. You're going to hear that interview coming up in just about 6 or 7 minutes from right now. Jerry, of course, going to join us later today as part of our broadcast team for that coverage at Fort Eastern. Ashley Malou, who is the TV personality at Fort Erie Racetrack, will be with us as well. So the four of us will bring you that coverage, but you're going to enjoy that interview with Sandy. He kind of walked Jerry through a trip down memory lane, looking back at some of those victories. He talked about maybe what he felt was his greatest ride in those four Queen's Plate wins. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear it. And he's such a great guy. You know, I've known Sandy a long time. He rode for me in California when he'd make his visits during the winter when Woodbine was closed. And he's just a really good guy and has tremendous stories because he rode with all the greats. He rode, champion horses, and he's just an amazing human.
Jim Lawson, who is the CEO here at Woodbine, responsible for a lot of the innovations and changes that are taking place, will join us at 8:35 Eastern Time. You're going to hear from Mark Cassie. Sat down with him yesterday morning for an extended interview. That interview coming your way at 9 o'clock Eastern. Darren Rogers is the Director of Communications at Churchill Downs, and let's not forget about racing at other places today. The Bashford Manor, part of a huge program on closing day at Churchill. So we'll talk to Darren right around 9:30. And Acacia Courtney from Gulfstream Park will be with us at 9:45. Acacia was part of our broadcast team here at Woodbine last year when that coverage was awarded a Sovereign Award earlier this season. She couldn't make it this year. She has to work at Gulfstream for the Summit of Speed card. So we'll talk to Acacia about that around 9:44.
Yeah, she's always got good insights from Gulfstream and a fantastic card down there today.
One other side note before we do get to that first commercial break, Jude. We saw some history here at Woodbine yesterday. They installed a new 7-furlong inner turf course, which, okay, if you've never been to Woodbine, I kind of referenced this at the open of the show. The main track in the United States is usually located on the outside of the turf course. Not the case here at Woodbine. The sprawling E.P. Taylor turf course is the one closest to the apron, and then the next track to the inside is the Tapeda main surface, and then inside of that, which used to be a harness track, is now a 7-furlong gorgeous, what they call the inner turf course here at Woodbine. They ran their first ever race on it yesterday afternoon, and everything went off without a hitch. It was a 9-race field. They broke from the gate. Bold rally, put in a bold rally to get up and win that race in the shadow of the wire for trainer Kevin Attard under Eurico Da Silva.
Yeah, it was a very interesting race. There was very little kickback on the course, despite the fact we had some afternoon showers, and the horses seemed to handle it well. It was really hotly contested down the stretch, several horses together at the finish, and it was a good kickoff for the new turf course, and everybody seemed pleased afterwards.
All part of a highly festive weekend here in the Toronto area and at Woodbine. We're going to tell you more about it as we move throughout the next 2 hours. We're back to hear from Hall of Fame jockey Sandy Hawley. That's next. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Woodbine is now racing 4 days a week, every Wednesday night, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. This weekend, come out to celebrate the Queen's Plate Festival with music, entertainment, and great racing. The $1 million Queen's Plate, the first leg of Canada's Triple Crown, highlights a Saturday card, which also features racing on the world-famous E.P. Taylor Turf Course, home of the longest stretch run in North America, and Woodbine's brand-new 7-furlong inner turf course. For more information, visit woodbine.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Alternation, sire of Serengeti Empress, winner of this year's Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks.
Serengeti Empress has taken the Kentucky Oaks.
From his first two crops, Alternation has produced 9 black type horses and 5 black type winners with more than $4.7 million in earnings. 79% of his runners have won or placed, and Alternation is among the leaders of his crop with average earnings per runner of over $42,000. Alternation, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Equine.
Attention, Kentucky breds. Make plans to race at the upcoming Kentucky Downs meet starting August 31st, where Kentucky breds compete for huge purses. Kentucky breds will run for $130,000 in maiden events, with allowance races offering up to $145,000, the highest in the nation. With just 5 days of racing, showcasing 14 stakes races and 4 graded stakes, with additional purse money available for KTDF eligible horses, Kentucky Downs is the place to race a Kentucky bred this summer. Visit KentuckyBred.org for details.
Brody's Cause, a grade one winner at 2 and 3 by Giants Causeway.
Brody's Cause and Corey Lannery, a tremendous run from deep in the pack to pull the upset in the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity.
His final time of 143.27 in Keeneland's Grade 1 Breeders' Futurity is the fastest running on dirt since 2000, while defeating Grade 1 winner, Exaggerator. Look for his first crop yearling selling this summer. Brody's Cause, standing at Spendthrift.
Hi, this is Larry Colmus, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And Wondegada joins Telekinesis in the Queen's Plate, and splitting them is Cooler Mike, and down the outside running on is also ahead by a century. Wondegada's in front, and she's dashed away in the Queen's Plate, ahead by a century into second. But there's no doubt who's the best today, and it's all about Wondegada, Wonder Woman herself. Demolished them in the Queen's Plate. What a brilliant win. Ahead by a century second. Cooler Mike third. Strike Me Down fourth. Telekinesis was fifth.
Robert Geller with the call of last year's Queen's Plate, and Wonder Godot, Wonder Godot, Wonder Godot, we'll just call her Wonder Woman. She was truly a superhero last year in winning the Gallop for the Guineas. She is trained by Mark Cassie, of course now retired, but Mark going to try and win it for a third time later today with two horses. He has Federal Law, he has Skywire, and if he could pull it off, Jude, it would be Mark's very first victory in the Queen's Plate with a male horse. Think about that. His two victories coming with fillies.
Yeah, well, the fillies he ran were both very, very good. So it's not surprising. And... you know, the Queen's Plate is a race that fillies have done quite well in, contrary to, you know, the Kentucky Derby where it's few and far between.
Yeah.
But Queen's Plate is great. I love the system that they have, too, where the Oaks leads into the Queen's Plate, and that's a nice thing because you can't do that in the States, and I think that that's good for the fillies.
You're going to hear from Mark Cassie coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern, but yesterday, Jerry Olguin, who has ridden in, I guess it was 5 or 6 Queen's Plates, never won one, but he's participated in them, and again, he'll be part of our coverage later this afternoon here on the network. Jerry took the time to visit with Hall of Fame jockey Sandy Hawley, who knows the feeling of winning the Queen's Plate. He's done it on 4 different occasions, and here's that interview for you here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Sandy, you had 4 Queen's Plate winners, which is, I rode in 5 of them. The closest I got was 5th, so it's amazing that you won 4.
Well, I rode in 6 Kentucky Derbies, and close I could finish was 3rd. So
that's how hard it is to win any race.
So. Any of the big races, for sure.
What was your best Queen's Plate memory?
You know what? They're all great, Jerry. You know, anytime you can ride in the Queen's Plate, and especially win it, it's a great thrill and an honor. But I'd have to say in 1978, I rode a horse called Regal Embrace. And Regal Embrace was trained by Mac Benson, and he had the horse perfect for the race. And it was actually owned by E.P. Taylor. And 12 years before that, I was at Mr. Taylor's farm looking for a job, just as a hot walker or a groom, and just wanted to try and be a jockey. So now here I am in the winner's circle with Mr. E.P. Taylor with Regal Embrace. So that was pretty special, Jerry.
That's amazing. What was your preparation like? Because now the jockeys, they get videos and they can see all this stuff. Before, when you rode it, like, how did you get to know the horse?
Well, you know what? Of course, as you know, you've probably ridden the horse 2 or 3 times before you ride him in the Queen's Plate. And, of course, some I was more confident than others. Some were long shots, so... you know, when you're riding one of the favorites, of course, you're very confident going in that you can win the race. But, you know, you go out there, doesn't matter what odds you are, the horses can't read the odds board, so you strive to try and win that race. And as you know, Jerry, before we go out, we look at the racing form, we see how the horse runs, looking at the form, and we try and pick his best race and try and ride him according to that. And, you know, when I won the four Queen's Plates, they're like second or third favorites, so I was very confident with them going in.
This week we're celebrating Canada Day, and this is Canada's biggest horse race. How did it feel like after you win it? What was the feeling that you got?
You know what? It was tremendous. And sometimes it doesn't sink in until later on. Like the fanfare, you have the flowers put on you, on your lap and everything, and everybody's excited. And so sometimes once you calm down, the next day you go, wow, I can't believe I just won the Queen's Plate. Yeah. And it was a tremendous feeling. I remember the first one I won on Almoner was Jerry Levine was the trainer, and he invited me out to the celebration party afterwards. And I wasn't a drinker, Jerry. And I had like three or four glasses of champagne, and I had a bad, bad headache the next day. I remember that one for sure.
Yeah, okay. What is you figure it was your best Queen's Plate, right? Like you said, you shouldn't have won, and you did such a great job that you made the money.
Yeah, I think it was, again, in 1978 with Regal Embrace. Like I won on L'Angeleur, he won easy. I won on Kennedy Road, he won easily as well. Almoner was a little bit tougher because it was a filly called Framfreluche, who was a really tough filly that year. And he ended up winning by about a length and a half. But Regal Embrace, we won by like a half a head.
Oh, yeah.
And Overskate was the favorite that year. And Regal Embrace, he actually ended up going wire to wire. I talked to Mr. Benson before the race. And he said, you know what, if you can be on an easy lead, go ahead and be on an easy lead. But if not, just lay just off the pace. And we were. We were on an easy lead the whole way down the backstretch. And then around the turn, Mr. Benson said, you know, when you get to the head of the stretch, just try and open up as far as you can. And I think halfway around the final turn, I asked him to run, and I just tried to open up as far as I could. And we opened up three or four lengths, and we won by a half a head. Overskate was flying at the end. So I think that was probably my best one.
So if you wouldn't have done that, you probably wouldn't have won.
If I hadn't have opened up, I think Overskate would have got us. Yeah. Rob Platts rode an absolutely perfect race that day, too. He saved ground on the inside and then wheeled him out at the head of the stretch. But we just got lucky to open up those two or three lengths and be able to hold on by a head.
This week on the Queen's Plate, the favorite comes out of the 14 hold. What strategy do you think Castellano has to use on this horse?
Well, the good thing, Jerry, is that you have a good run before you get to that first turn. You have almost 3/8 of a mile, a little over a quarter of a mile before you get to that first turn. So you're going to have time to get in position. And what's her name? Lexi Liu won from the 14th post in 2014. And so I don't think it's going to be a problem at all. He's definitely the favorite. If I could ride any horse in a race, it would be Avi's Flatter for sure.
What was the post position that you got that you didn't think you could win one?
You know what? When you're down in the one hole, you know, sometimes you think, man, I wish I wasn't down stuck in this one hole. So that was, I think, the toughest post. And when I saw Josie Kerr, when somebody else picked the one hole and she had the last pick, and I figured now she's going to end up with a 14 hole, I think she was a lot happier being in the 14 than being in the one. So if you don't get a good break, you might be in trouble.
Right. So you got to meet the queen when you won the Queen's Plate? Or
no, actually, the years that I won the Queen's Plate, unfortunately, the queen wasn't here. The year that Royal Chocolate won the Queen's Plate, Teddy Colangelo won the race, so he was in the winner's circle with the queen. But I did have an opportunity to meet the queen in the paddock, which was really, really nice.
Nice.
Remember, I had hair down on my shoulders. She must have wondered, who in the heck is this?
Thank you very much, Sandy. It was a nice interviewing you, and everybody looks up to you here, and you're a great jockey and a great person.
Well, thank you, buddy. I think you're a great rider as well, and I think you did an awesome job with your very first interview. Congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Jerry O'Gien breaking his maiden for us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and who better to do it with than the Hall of Famer Sandy Hawley, and a four-time Queen's Plate winner. You heard him talk about that ride with Regal Embrace and how that strategy paid off, and he told me after the interview, he was talking with Jerry and I after we wrapped up, and he said, we never beat that other horse again. He said that was the one time we were able to beat him, and
well,
it was on the
right
biggest
day.
Stage.
Yeah, that's the day to do it. So, Sandy, just an unbelievable person, and that was a good way to end the interview.
Yeah, he talked about the post position for the favorite in this afternoon's race, and he was talking about Avi's Flatter breaking from post 14, and he said, Javier Castellano, who will be aboard, will have plenty of time to get in position because the race starts down to our far left, down at the top of the stretch, and then they, much like the Kentucky Derby, they run through the stretch, and you have that whole length of the stretch to get in position. And again, after the interview, Jerry and Sandy were going back and forth, both former riders who knew how to ride this particular surface, and they both agreed you would much rather be outside than inside if you had your choice.
Yeah, I think that's always the case, no matter what racetrack you're at or what kind of race you're in. When you're outside, you have so many more choices. When you're inside, you pretty much have to go. So it eliminates a lot of options that jockeys have, and I always prefer to be outside. I used to have a horse named Plenty Conscious that liked to go to the lead, and one day he drew the 12 hole at Hollywood Park, and people said, oh, he can't win from the 12 hole. And I said, just watch him. And he set the track record for a mile and eight that day. He just blasted off and went to the front, and that was it. So, you know, I mean, you can do a lot of cool things when you're outside, and when you're inside, you're at the mercy of everybody else.
Now, the horse that is inside in this year's Queen's Plate is the lone filly in this year's race. That is number one, Desert Ride, who comes in for trainer Neil Howard. His first Queen's Plate starter, as a matter of fact, for Neil. And Desert Ride, owned by Samson Farm, that is a historic name here in Canada. They are in search of a sixth Queen's Plate victory. She'll have to overcome that inside post. But, Jude, she won the Woodbine Oaks here at Woodbine back on June 8th, and she's a filly with all kinds of talent.
Yeah, no, she's very good, and Neil is probably the best trainer that's not in the Hall of Fame. He's a very talented trainer, and he wouldn't be bringing her up here for this if he didn't think she was certainly capable of handling the class factor. So the fact she won the Oaks kind of underlines the fact that Neil's on the right track, and wouldn't shock me at all if she didn't win the race.
Yeah, she's got a lot of ability, and again, she'll have to overcome that inside post, but she appears talented enough to do it. Her jockey, and correct me if I get the name wrong, Steve Bahen or Bahen, proper pronunciation?
I've heard most people say Bahen, but...
Bahen?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, he knows how to win this race, too. The longest-priced winner in the history of the race is TJ's Lucky Moon, who paid $166 for a $2 win bet back in 2002. Steve was aboard that day, so he knows how to win this race.
If your wife was here that day, she might not be here now, because she would have been all over that horse.
Yeah, that's right.
She always bets the moon horses.
That's right. Is she going to bet the moon horse in today's Queen's Plate?
She certainly is.
Moon swings. What? There you go. So there's another angle. Not only do we have a filly taking on the boys, and as we alluded to earlier, the fillies have done very well historically in the Queen's Plate, but you have two maidens, both trained by Mike DiPaolo. One of them is number two, Moon Swings, breaking just to the outside of Desert Ride. 0-9, but she has competed in five different stakes races. So they've been high. He has competed, so they've been high on this horse for a very long time.
Yeah, well, that happens sometimes, especially in these three-year-old events. We see that happen in the Kentucky Derby once in a while. But you know, the horses perform decently against some top horses, so you got to give them a shot if you have a chance.
And again, the Queen's Plate coming up at 5:36 Eastern. Our coverage 4 to 6 Eastern time. It will be on a different Sirius XM channel than you're listening to now. We'll be on Sirius XM 156 all over North America, 4 to 6 Eastern. The coverage presented by our friends at TwinSpires.com and Hillendale Farm. Make sure you're locked into us later this afternoon. You can also stream us worldwide anywhere you may be at horseracingradio.net. Going to get to our Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington. When we return, we'll talk with Woodbine CEO Jim Lawson. That's next, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
The World Championship of Thoroughbred Racing was on the line at the lovely, majestic Longchamp Racecourse just outside Paris on October 3, 1965, when the most prestigious Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe was about to unfold. And what a star-studded fielder was on hand to contest it. Meadow Court from Ireland, Oncidium from England, Aniline from the Soviet Union, Ragazzo, Soderini, Diatomy, Reliance, Caliph, Marco Visconti, France's Great Seabird, the Big Chestnut, Little Tom Rolfe from America, and Free Ride, who was an entry with Diatomy. A huge crowd had gathered at the glorious Longchamp Racecourse, which in all its splendor was among the aesthetically most beautiful in the world. It exuded class, and there was class aplenty on the racetrack to match it on this day. In the paddock, Seabird, the big local favorite, looked somewhat skittish and was sweating, as was Reliance, although it was a very warm day and the sun was beating down. Tom Rolfe, the American entry, was calm and created a stir among the crowd as he was ponied during the post-parade to the start. French racegoers had not been accustomed to that practice at their races. Oncidium, the English horse, was showing signs of nervousness, Aniline, the Russian entry, was very businesslike, calm, and quiet. At the starting post, Oncidium caused some problems, but the rest of the field lined up in perfect order. At the break, Marco Visconti went right to the front. Khalif picked up to chase, and Meadowcourt and Aniline were up near the front as well. Seabird, with Australian Pat Glennon in the saddle, and Reliance, with renowned Yves Saint-Martin up, were well-rated, in no difficulty, running fifth and sixth. They were obviously stalking the leaders, waiting for the right time to make that one big run. The going was on the soft side of Longchamp that day, and America's Tom Rolfe was showing definite signs of difficulty in handling it. He was far back and never really got into the hunt, so to speak. As the field rounded the bend and started for home at the top of the stretch, Glennon let loose on Seabird, and he chewed up huge pieces of turf with long, smooth strides until he veritably flew by the front quartet to assume command at the top of the straight to pull out to an open six-length lead. That incredible display of speed had shot him forward as though propelled by a rocket. Saint-Martin asked his mount Reliance for a move at the same time Seabird moved, but there was no way he could stay with the flying French chestnut. Seabird maintained the margin to win by six open lengths over the previously unbeaten Reliance, and it was another five back to Diatomy with free ride fourth and Aniline fifth. Seabird had turned in a phenomenal effort, totally dominating the other 19 horses in the field, and he was now to be compared with the famous Rebeau. After retirement from the racetrack, Seabird came to stand at stud in America for John W. Galbraith, and as a consequence, his legacy lives on in the world of American racing. That performance, October 3rd, 1965, at Longchamp, in the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe, was indeed a great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a B-mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake B-mesh horse fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Power.
Anchor Down has the lead as they turn for home. Anchor Down in front by three. Anchor Down has built a five-length lead with just a 16th of the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion.
Anchor Down is still there coming to the 16th pole. Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainsway Stallion Anchor Down, a son of three-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 132 and 4 fifths, posting a 108 buyer speed figure. A half to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu. Anchor Down strongly resembles his sire and will be represented by his first crop of yearlings this year. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Hi, it's Ian Wilkes here, and you're listening to HRRN Radio.
In the lead at the 5/16th, Corduroy Road, a half a length, Super Success. Federal Law on the inside, My Silence Appeals, three wide, Dundrum tapped up, and down the lane they come in the Queenston. Corduroy Road in front. Federal Law looking for room, will have to try again. Down the outside, My Silence is going up, and Dundrum finishing well. My Silence hit the front. Dundrum trying to wear down My Silence. They'll battle it out with Federal Law, and it's My Silence in front. Federal Law coming. Federal Law coming right through on the inside to win it. Federal Law got up to win the Queenston. Has a bright future. My Silence is second. Dundrum third. Behind them, Super Success and Corduroy Road.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Federal Law getting the victory in the Queenston Stakes here at Woodbine back on May 19th. You heard Robert Geller with the call. He'll have the call of this year's Queen's Plate and all the races coming up later this afternoon. Federal Law is a horse that has now won 3 of 11 starts and bred by Jim Dandy Stable, the son of Scat Daddy, was bred by our good friend Jim Lawson, who is the CEO of Woodbine Entertainment. So he is with us now, and we're going to start there. I'm not going to bury the lead, my friend. In all due respect to the new Inner Turf course, you bred a Queen's Plate starter later this afternoon. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. It's fun to be part of the race in a different way for a change.
This is your first Queen's Plate starter that you've bred?
Yes, as an individual, yes. My father had bred many, but yes.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty special.
Yeah, it's fun.
Does it give you a little different feeling coming into this year's Queen's Plate?
Oh, sure. It's the history of the family really dates back to the early 80s, and my father had a three-time champion, Eternal Search, and Eternal Search had produced a mare named Destroy, who was a Sovereign Award winner broodmare of the year. And when my father passed away, I kept the dam of Federal Law. So there's a lot of history and pride.
Why Scat Daddy?
Oh, I certainly at the time, I guess I was fortunate and always try and look at young sires. I tend to look at sires that have speed, as we were talking earlier, Mike, bred to run happy this year. And subsequently, there's a nice two-year-old on the grounds right now by Into Mischief that I sold. Roger Adfield bought on behalf of Bill Warner last year. And so I'm always looking for that precocious mild type sire, and Scat Daddy just fit the bill at the time, and certainly as I look forward and look out at this turf course, the Into Mischief type breeding and so forth, I'm going to continue to look for sires that have some grass pedigree in there too.
What got you hooked on thoroughbred racing?
Well, I've grown up with it. My father is in the Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Fame and ran a modest stable here. While it was modest, he won 70 stakes races at Woodbine, running two or three horses per year. And so I was the youngest child in the family and kind of grew up and hung around here. And in law school, I spent my summers working down in Paris, Kentucky for the famed veterinarian Dr. Robert Copeland, and still have a connection. Dr. Copeland's still on Sunnyside Farm in Paris, Kentucky, and my trainer down there is Jeff Thornbury, and so I've kind of grown up with that group in Paris, Kentucky, and it's been a big part of my life.
I know you have a lot of other duties, and you're running around here checking everything out, making sure everything is staying on track coming up to this year's Queen's Plate. But do you even stop and think about what the moment might be like later this afternoon at 5:38 Eastern if Federal Law crosses the finish line first?
Well, I'd be excited and happy. I mean, I'll be excited and happy for Mark Cassie. And of course, I don't know the people from Qatar, but I think it'd just be it'll bring back a lot of sentimental memories about my father and all he accomplished. So,
yeah, be really special. Certainly be special. Jim Lawson with us, the CEO of Woodbine Entertainment here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jim, at the top of the show, Jude and I talked about the inaugural race contested on the brand new 7-furlong inner turf course. This is something that you are very proud of, and you should be. It is absolutely gorgeous, and it's been quite a process getting to this point, but you're here, and everything went beautifully yesterday.
It did. It took years of planning, including making a decision to put a deposit with a local farmer to grow grass for us about 4 years ago. I mean, it's that kind of detail. And then we worked closely with the experts in the industry on getting the proper drainage and proper surface. If we had one thing in mind, it was to ensure that it had great drainage and that it could withstand some rain. So we've achieved that. The early reports are we've had some trial runs on it, and of course we had the race yesterday, and it does drain extremely well. There was some rain in the last couple of days, and there was no kick up on the turf yesterday. It was really fun to see it finally come to fruition, and it's been a project, and we're all excited and very proud of what we've accomplished.
Yeah, it's going to be so nice to have that when you do have inclement weather, and it was amazing yesterday. There wasn't one clump during the whole race. It was so great, and I know the horsemen were really happy. Catherine Day Phillips was talking about it afterwards, and the reports she had from people that ran were excellent. So that's fantastic. When the horsemen are all happy, that's an accomplishment.
Yes, that's a big accomplishment. I was so excited. I was watching the race, and I ran out to the finish line at the end, and I talked to Eurico da Silva, who won the inaugural race on the turf course, and I said, "How was it?" He said, "It was like a magic carpet." He said it was just spectacular, so smooth, and the horses took to it very well, and he just thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, it's part of a new, I won't call it a new forward-thinking Woodbine, but there are plenty of innovations that are taking place here at Woodbine, plenty of new construction that is ongoing, including a hotel that you are building, which is going to be down to our far left toward the top of the stretch on the other side of the grandstand. That's going to be amazing when it's finished, so I'm going to allow you to talk about that, but you think about the changes that are taking place and what it's going to mean, not just to racing here in Canada, but to racing as a whole throughout North America. Woodbine really is somewhat of a leader in this innovative category right now.
Well, we certainly have tried to, in terms of, I think we recognize as a management team, as a board, that this industry needs to be very forward-thinking and innovative in every way. And that starts for us. It starts with technology and the group that we've hired to run our technology group. You'll see a new app coming out this fall called Dark Horse that we're extremely excited about. It's going to lead the industry in terms of other things that we want to try here. The development is going to be extremely important in terms of, when I say use the word try to get people out here and expose them to the industry. So a 5,000-seat concert venue, a major hotel trackside. We're hoping and expecting to have 14 million people come to this site every year, and we're investing $100 million with a partner in a train station stop here, including a Union Pearson stop, which is the commuter rail between the airport and downtown. And so there are lots of things that we're doing to make sure that this industry is healthy for decades. And we have to be very innovative and look differently at everything we're doing. And our management team prides itself on change and innovation. And as I said, you know, one area that we definitely lead in is technology. And I think you can get a feel for that, not only with the Dark Horse application, but our simulcast product, our wagering products. We're trying to be cutting edge in everything we're doing, and that starts with good people, and we have good people to put those things in place.
Nice thing on a layover, Terminal A, Terminal B, Woodbine, right?
Yes.
Stuck in the airport for 12 hours, go to the track. I think that's fantastic. That's great.
Yeah, no, it's all part of what is going to be a spectacular renovation here. You mentioned the amount of money that Woodbine is investing. It is a commitment. It's going to be an ongoing process as well. What's kind of the timetable for kind of getting everything together?
Well, as I've said a few times this week, Mike, we've got it looks like Dubai out here right now. There's five cranes sitting at the top of the stretch there, and the construction is underway. There's a cement plant on the property, and we're looking for the first phase, which would include the hotel and the concert venue and gaming floor expansion and a five-story parkade. We're looking within a time frame of 3 years. The GO Train, our transit stop We're hoping to get under construction next year. So next 3 to 4 years in terms of occupancy, and with 700 acres of land, much of it developable, it's a 15 or 20-year project. But at the core of it always will be this racetrack that we're staring at right now. That's our only mandate as a racetrack, is as a company, is to protect and maintain horse racing. So at the center of it will always be this racetrack. So it's exciting.
The topic in thoroughbred racing that is on most people's minds and has come to the forefront over the course of the past several months is horse safety. With the situation at Santa Anita, with the decision of Breeders' Cup earlier this week to stand by their longtime partner and keep the Breeders' Cup at Santa Anita, you have placed an emphasis on horse and human safety here at Woodbine. And you threw out a statistic the other day, and I hope I wrote it down correctly, Jim. It was at the post position draw. You said that 0.1% of all horses here at Woodbine have suffered a catastrophic injury. And I think we all agree one horse suffering a catastrophic injury is too many. But 0.1%, that's a spectacular percentage, my friend. What's the secret?
Well, the secret, I think, for us is to maintain a consistent surface. It's certainly easier to maintain a consistent surface with our main track being Tapeda, but we are, and you'll have a chance today to observe it, and it's not just, we have 9 turf races today. We take extra special care to make sure that whether it's the grass courses now or the Tapeda, that we are maintaining them on a consistent basis. You know, the horses and any expert and veterinarian will tell you it's because horses can take bad steps, and they take bad steps because of inconsistency in the surface. And so you will see just an army of people after every turf race today making sure that it's done. And as I've gone around the world and looked at how other racetracks maintain their surfaces, I think we're at the top of the heap in terms of the care and the expenditure that we do to make sure that we're offering our horses a safe surface. And I think we have an advantage because, as I said, of the Tapeda surface. But having said that, we have a very low rate on our turf courses too. We're more, and we get criticized for it. We move the races off the grass. You don't see a lot of soft and yielding turf at Woodbine, which we get criticized for. At the same time, we protect our turf course, and it's all about safety for us. And it shows in the record. And that's why people like training here. People like being here because of our emphasis and priority on safety.
Yeah, you have so many outstanding places to train a horse. The trainers have options that they don't have at other racetracks. The training track, the dirt training track, the turf course. You got turf gallops. You got places where you can turn horses out. I mean, it's like Disneyland for horses. And when you have all those options and you can do different things, it's just better for the horses in general. And I think that's one of the outstanding things about Woodbine.
Yeah, we're proud of what we have here. We're very fortunate, as I said, to have 700 acres of land that we can offer the different facilities, and it's a big attraction for trainers and owners to come here because of the facilities.
Jim, we always like to wrap up the interview, at least I do anyway, with a little update on the CFL, because you're obviously intimately involved with that organization. Last night, the Hamilton Tiger Cats continued their perfect season, ran their record to 3-0 with a 41-10 victory over the Alouettes. You have 3 undefeated teams right now. You have the Tiger Cats, you have the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and the Ottawa Red Raiders. Or Red Blacks, not Red Raiders, Red Blacks. What do you think? Who comes out of that at the end of the season?
Well, as chairman of the league, I have to be pretty careful. Now, I will say a couple of points of interest. I will say, first of all, my father played for Hamilton, and I've kind of grown up with that organization. And interestingly enough, all of the stars from the Hamilton Tiger Cats are coming to the Queen's Plate today, where they will be sitting in the first row of the Royal Enclosure. A dozen of their top starters will be here today, and they've been in Hamilton for a while, which makes Hamilton strong because they've been able to maintain a core of the players. So they'll all be here today. I have to be careful, but Hamilton's got a strong team this year, and a big part of it is because they've been able to maintain their core. and not lose a lot of people to free agency. So Canadian football, I love it. It's exciting, and so we'll see how it all turns out. But right now, Hamilton's looking awfully good.
Yeah, it was fun to watch. We got a chance to check it out in the hotel last night. Jim Lawson, the CEO of Woodbine, chairman of the CFL, nice enough to spend some time with us again. Jim, I'll look you in the eye and tell you, this is one of our favorite trips all year long, and it's because of you and your team and the fantastic job you do with not just us, but all of the media. You make us feel like family, and thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you for coming up here. It means a lot to us to have particularly the American media come up. I mean, America American wagering is such a huge and important part of our business, and it really means a lot to us to have all you guys come up and support us and spread the word of the great product we have here in facilities. And thanks so much for coming up and having me on today. It's been great.
Yeah, enjoy the Queen's Plate and all the best with federal law later today.
Thank you.
All right, Jim Lawson here on HRN. When we come back, it's your Industry Star of the Week presented by Stuart Morris. It's a special one, too. You won't want to miss it. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Breeders' Cup.
Curlin, sire of a classic winner or classic placed horse in each crop, including two-year-old champion Good Magic, Palace Malice, and Exaggerator. The leading sire by lifetime average earnings index and two-year-old sales average, including a $3.65 million colt who established a Fasig Tipton Gulfstream sale record. Tanya Gunther bred Justifies Dam Stage Magic to Curlin in 2019 and said, quote, "I just think if you want to breed classic winners, you have to have Curlin in your bag of stallions." Curlin, stand at Hillendale.
Springtime tips and fun facts from Paul, Kristen, and Dexter at Total Wine & More.
Did you know there were over 1 million bubbles in a glass of champagne? Did someone say brunch?
Wine is made in virtually every country in the world, and I'm ready to give you a tour to find the right one.
Ham's sweet and salty richness pairs perfectly with a juicy Pinot Noir.
Now with 2 locations in Lexington. Visit our newest store in Hamburg off Sir Barton Way. Shop online at TotalWine.com. The selection is ridiculous. Cheers!
Broken Vow continues to deliver rock-solid results. The top 10 Son of Unbridled has sired nearly 150 black-type stakes horses, 75 black-type stakes winners, and over $71 million in earnings. Among those sired by Broken Vow last season were Chocolate Martini, winner of the Grade 2 Fairgrounds Oaks, and Life in Shambles, winner of the Grade 3 Fall Highweight. Sire of Eclipse Champion Champagne Room, Broken Vow has sired additional Grade 1 winners on Bridal Bell, Rosalind, Sassy Image, and Cotton Blossom. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
And on the outside, Majestic Eagle. Majestic Eagle gets up.
Majestic Eagle, the 4-year-old son of Darley stallion Medaglia d'Oro, won the Grade 3 American Stakes at Santa Anita on Sunday for his first career stakes victory, earning a lifetime best 90 buyer speed figure, becoming the 6th black type winner already this year for Medaglia d'Oro. And that makes Majestic Eagle your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley stallion Medaglia d'Oro is the horse with the Midas touch. In 2018, Medaglia d'Oro joined Northern Dancer, Stormcat, and AP Indy as the only stallions ever to sire as many as $8 million yearlings in a single year. Watch for his latest crop of yearlings at the upcoming select sales and learn more about Medaglia d'Oro by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Avi's Flatter, fifth between horses. Louder Than Bomb, center of the course, is in sixth. War Film is seventh toward the rail. Henley's Joy, last of eighth, moving by the quarter pole. On the way to Neverland, chased by the Black Album, second toward the inside. Avi's Flatter, Louder Than Bombs. Henley's Joy is still back in the sixth position. War Film looks for running room toward the rail. Avi's Flatter and the Black Album come forward to challenge on the way to Neverland. Avi's Flatter with the lead. Henley's Joy is coming fast but late. Here's the wire. Avi's Flatter wins the Kentucky Utilities Transylvania for Javier Castellano.
Kurt Becker with the call. Avi's Flatter, a huge victory at Keeneland in the Transylvania Stakes. Avi's Flatter is the favorite in this afternoon's Queen's Plate, at least the morning line favorite, at odds of 5-2. We'll see if he can pull it off. Canada's champion two-year-old is trained by two-time Queen's Plate winner Josie Carroll, who will be inducted into the Canadian Hall of Fame later this year in August. And we thought it only appropriate on this Queen's Plate morning that Josie Carroll be our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris.
Everyone who takes out a thoroughbred trainer's license hopes for a Hall of Fame career. And although many are called, few are chosen. Big wins and signature events certainly promote the cause, and as trainer Josie Carroll knows, nothing will get you into the Canadian Hall of Fame faster than a Queen's Plate victory.
It's our showcase race. It's a race that the whole country is aware of. So in a sport that doesn't get a lot of attention or recognition, it's something that Canadians all recognize.
Carroll won her first Queen's Plate in 2006 with Jim and Alice Sapara's Edenwald.
That was a huge moment for me. You know, growing up in Canada, this was such a showcase race for us. I mean, it's our version of the Derby. I mean, it's run for 160 years, you know. So it was really monumental, and it was a big moment for some owners that early in my career had taken a chance on me. So it was particularly nice to win for them.
In 2011, Carroll would get her second Queen's Plate with Donver Stables Inglorious.
She was an exceptional filly, and coming off her Canadian Oaks win, she just got better. You know, we hesitated a little coming back with a filly in 3 weeks, but she just improved so much off that race that it seemed the move to go with her. Race day was very, very hot. I recall horses were all getting hot in the paddock. We had walked around there for a very long time. She was just so cool and collected. In fact, when she got bored in the paddock and tired of walking around, she put her head down and tried to graze on us in the middle. At that point, we knew she was going to run the race of her life when she was just so collected as everybody was kind of losing it. So, you know, to see her coming down the stretch and just dominate the way she did was very exciting.
Those victories and $45 million in purses, coupled with many graded stakes wins at storied North American tracks like Keeneland, Churchill Downs, Gulfstream Park, and Saratoga, have earned Carroll her place in the Canadian Hall of Fame.
You know, something as a kid coming around the races you'd never in your life have expected to happen. I just find it a huge honor, and I really appreciate the people that have put me in there. You know, I was fortunate to work for two Hall of Famers. Mac Benson, who trained for Winfield, was one of the first people I worked for on the racetrack. And, you know, I did a couple of years with Roger Atfield. So two tremendous trainers that helped mentor me. And it's such an honor to have my name beside theirs.
With all the personal success in her tremendous career, it is not surprising that Carroll considers the minutes after her first Queen's Plate win with Edenwald her fondest memory.
He was galloping back in front of the crowd. And as he came back, there was this wave of cheering that sort of swept through the grandstand, and it was such a moment of pure appreciation for the horse and what he's done. It's a moment that always stands out in my memory.
For Hall of Fame trainer Josie Carroll, it's always about the horse. What will she say if she wins another Queen's Plate this afternoon?
Extraordinary.
Yeah, wonderful piece on Josie Carroll. JT, she's obviously our Industry Star of the Week, but she deserves to be getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. She will be the first female trainer ever inducted into the Canadian Hall of Fame, which in itself is an honor, but it doesn't matter what her gender is. The lady can train like no other.
Yeah, she's a really cool person, too. I always remember the first time I met her. I was working for Keeneland, and I was going around getting interviews from trainers before the meet opened up, and I see this girl with a ponytail, and she's cleaning out a feed tub, and, mm-hmm. and I said, could you direct me to Josie Carroll? And she kind of laughed. She goes, I'm Josie Carroll. Not what I was expecting, and but she was just very engaging, very nice, and totally into her horses, and I knew right away she was somebody that was going to be big in the game if she wasn't already. I mean, she was coming down to Keeneland from Canada and, you know, maybe not bringing the best horses, but she held her own and won plenty of races. She's very talented and a great person.
That Industry Star of the Week segment is brought to you each week at that time by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his entire team. He knows that their success is because of you. With multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. Make sure you visit a Stuart Morris consignment at all the major sales coming up later this year. Mark Cassie is on deck next. You're going to hear that interview, including as part of a huge second hour of the program. We'll tell you all about it when we return, right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Point of Honor has taken the lead. Ulele runs after her. Cookie Dough is third. Point of Honor and Ulele down to the wire. Point of Honor wins the black-eyed Susan Under, hot-riding Javier Castellano.
There's an eighth of a mile to go. Bolo keeps on going. River Boyne on the inside. Catapult far outside. Bowie Zero. But Bolo has something left for the final 16th, and it's going to be Bolo coast-to-coast in the Shoemaker Mile.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Mr. Ritz and Super Tabbit neck and neck. Super Tabbit, Mr. Ritz, they hit the wire. A headbop between the two Super Tabbit, or Mr. Ritz, a headbop decides it. A thriller in the Eclipse.
Hunting Horn trying to hold on. Here comes Channel Maker on the outside, ranging up alongside. Magic Wand and Arc Lower closing in two. Channel Maker strikes the front. Channel Maker wins the Man of War.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back. Hour number two rolling on here on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Happy Queen's Plate Day. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, that is Baron and Pontiff. We are overlooking the finish line at Woodbine in Toronto. Gorgeous morning. The main track is closed for training. The horses are all the way across. We're looking at them now over by the barn area, straight across from us. They are on the training track. Training will continue there throughout the morning. And then, of course, first post today, noon Eastern, the Queen's Plate set for 5:36. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program, interviews with Hall of Fame jockey Sandy Hawley and Woodbine CEO Jim Lawson and that feature on Josie Carroll, simply head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure. It's there at horseracingradio.net. JT, big day, Canada Day coming up on Monday, so it's a big weekend here in the Toronto area and a huge, huge day of racing, the signature day in the country with the Queen's Plate coming up later today.
Yeah, it's a fantastic, beautiful morning and going to be a great afternoon. Fantastic card here at Woodbine, a lot of good racing, 9 turf races, 2 on the new course and 7 on the traditional E.P. Taylor course, and it's just going to be one of those days that you don't want to miss.
Going to be a gorgeous day, too. Temperatures in the upper 70s, and that's welcome news to all the contenders in this year's Queen's Plate, including the two for trainer Mark Cassie. He will send out Federal Law, who we talked about in the first half of the show, and his other contender in the race, Skywire, has been ultra impressive. He's 4-1 on the morning line. Well, yesterday, Mark took the time to sit down and talk with me, and we look back on this, well, year that has been so spectacular for him, and we looked ahead to this afternoon's Queen's Plate.
We have a wonderful group of people that help us out, not just our team that is Team Cassie, but obviously we have some super, super owners that give us good quality horses. And from the beginning, I didn't realize until somebody brought it up, I guess, you know, there's the three classics in the U.S. and then the three Canadian classics. And I think we've won 5 out of the last 6, which is, I didn't even realize that until somebody said that the other day. But, you know, that's kind of what, anytime we get a horse, that's what we aim for. So I feel very fortunate to be able to, like I said, to have these type of horses and to be able to win them.
We had a conversation, I guess it was 4 or 5 years ago, and you told me that you were putting an emphasis, when it came to your program, you were putting an emphasis on winning classic races and finding horses that could win classic races. What things specifically have you done over the past several years that have allowed you to have this kind of success?
Well, we made some major changes. I guess it would have been 5, 6, 7 years ago when we wanted to start focusing more on the U.S. We went, and a lot of people don't know this, but we built a training center, and we geared it to suit North America, not just Canada, but more in the U.S. And you're starting to see this. I said to a few people, I said, we've been fortunate, and this was 3 or 4 years ago, we've done a lot of good things, and I said, but this training center and is going to make us even better, and it's worked.
How about the horses you've been able to select and have owners give you horses that kind of fit those profiles? Tell me about the horses.
Well, of course, you know, it's a snowball effect. Once if you can have some success, it allows you to then train for bigger owners and being able to go out and get the higher quality horses. When you do that, then you have a better shot of winning the classics. I would say 10 years ago that I would be lucky to have 5 horses that could fall in the category of possibly going on to be classic horses. Now maybe 50 every year or 40 or something like that. So
yeah,
you increase your chances, and you know, and it's worked. It's worked well for us.
People won't realize, they think of you as a Canadian because you've had so much success here, but you were born in Indianapolis, Indiana. You grew up in Ocala working around your dad's operation and took out your trainer's license in Massachusetts, winning your first race at the Great Barrington Fair, which is now no longer in existence.
And matter of fact, coming back, though.
They are talking about bringing it back.
I want to go back and run a horse there.
About 30 minutes from my hometown where I grew up,
We're going to bring something there.
At that point, think back to those days. Could you ever imagine we'd be sitting here, you being a Hall of Fame trainer and being a multiple classic winning trainer?
No. I mean, if you'd asked me that 15 years ago even, you know, I just didn't know that it would ever. And I was, you know, from a little boy, I always wanted to accomplish those things. But to actually, you know, now be able to say that we've done it is just amazing to me.
Take me back to the moment when War of Will crossed the finish line in front in the Preakness this year.
It was, as far as, you know, any accomplishment we've ever achieved in racing, it was number one for so many reasons. One, to be able to win a classic and to be able to win a race that I've been watching since I was a little boy, to win one of those. And then given all the turmoil in the Kentucky Derby and the other thing, anybody that's been around me I've praised War of Will for a long, long time, and for him to be able to show everybody what I've known about him for a long, you know, there was just so many things. And then I said to my wife, Tina, I said, I don't think I've ever hugged you so hard. And it was nice to do that and have her by my side as well.
Yeah, it's certainly special. You think back on the Derby for a minute here, and you talked about everything that went on in the Kentucky Derby. You and I have talked before. Nobody knows if War of Will would have gone on to win the Kentucky Derby. Only God knows, as you like to say. But was that a tough pill to swallow?
It really wasn't. It really wasn't. I was just so happy that he was okay, that everybody was okay, that surprisingly, you know, I think NBC did a story on my brother and I when I was like 10. And I said at that point, they said, what do you want to do when you get older? I said, I want to win the Kentucky Derby. So we haven't been able to achieve that yet. So to lose the opportunity, because who knows what would have happened, but it was going to be a horse race. But it really didn't bother me. I was just so grateful that Orwell was still there. And going back to the Preakness, you know, just be able to run in the Preakness, I was ecstatic. And then to actually go and win it. And I just never really looked back. You know, everybody always wants to say, well, what if? I'm just happy with the results, so there's no really what if.
Let's look ahead 3 weeks after the Preakness then. You come to the Belmont Stakes. War of Will comes into the race in fine shape, and it looks like the Preakness winner is sitting on a big race. And all of a sudden, here comes your other horse, Sir Winston, who gives you the victory in that race. Tell me about being in the moment there.
That was a strange moment. It didn't surprise me at all that Sir Winston won. We'd been saying all week long that he was sitting on an extremely good race. It was emotionally, you know, a lot of people looked at me and said, you know, you just didn't seem as happy. But the best way to describe that is if you have two kids, right?
Yeah.
So I have my two children there, and one just accomplished one of the greatest feats of all time for us, and the other one kind of had a bad day. And so you want to be happy for your one son or daughter, and then you feel bad for your other one. So it was a little bittersweet.
Yeah.
I was so happy for the farmers because they're wonderful people and they deserve it, and I was happy for Sir Winston. But in the same time, I was sad for War of Will and sad for Gary Barber. So, you know, it was an entirely different feeling than the Preakness.
You know what struck me as being somewhat interesting and a little bit different? You win two classic races, two-thirds of the American Triple Crown, and neither owner is there to accept the trophy with you for either race. Did you ever think that would happen?
Yeah, two different. No, two different. Deals, you know, luckily, you know, Tracy's feeling better now. He was just a little under the weather.
Yeah.
And as we know with Gary, he does have a day job. And I often say, okay, don't quit your day job because we need the day job.
That's been a great relationship, Gary Barber and yourself. You go back a long way. Tell me about that relationship and how that started.
It's kind of crazy. You just, you know, you go back through your life and see how little things can mean so many. I had a horse called Patriotic and Proud. Aaron Wellman bought all of him from me. I owned part of him for Eclipse. And at the time, then Gary Barber bought a piece of him, and we had some success. He was a pretty nice horse. One day Gary called me and introduced himself and said, I'd like to be a little more prominent in Canada. And I said, well, that sounds good to me. And just, you know, we've had just amazing success. He's a great guy too, and you know, we have we talk pretty well every day. He thinks out of the box. We're fortunate. If you look at a horse like Sir Winston and his career, we took some crazy shots where a lot of owners wouldn't even let me run them in the races. I mean, I can still remember our conversation, Tracy and I. He had won the display here at Woodbine, and we were sitting in Ocala, and I said to Tracy, we could go up and run in the Withers on the dirt. I said, but he may get beat 40 lengths. As long as you're okay with that, I said, because I can't tell you whether he's going to run good or bad. He's an extremely different type of horse to train. And he goes, I'm good with it. Let's try it. And we did that, and he ran well, and it led to other things. But there's what the old saying, if you're afraid to step off first, you can't steal second. So a lot of times, you know, that's what we're doing. And that's probably why you'll never see me be a high percentage trainer, but I also believe there's a lot of horses out there that wouldn't be where they were if if I was that trainer, because I will. One thing about me, I'll run them, and I always say they're like puzzles. You have to keep trying the pieces. A lot of times the pieces don't fit, and when they don't fit, you go on to another piece. And that's my philosophy, and it's worked very well for me.
Yeah, we started by talking about the success you've had, certainly over the last 12 months or so, but you've had a lot of success going back before that in your career, obviously being in the Hall of Fame. But how important is it to have owners that are philosophically on the same page as you?
It's everything. You know, it's – I've trained for people in the past that don't want to lose. And if – that all that's all fine and dandy, but it doesn't work well that way. You sometimes, you know, you need to explore and you need to lose to go on to the next step. And you know, I like my horses. I like my horses to get lots of starts. I think every race is a learning experience, and a lot of, you know, questions are answered every time you run. Sometimes you don't like the answers to the questions you ask, but you have to ask them. And usually, one thing leads to another. And I'm a big strategizer.
Really?
Oh yeah, I love playing chess. I'm a strategizer.
How do you strategize with your horses? How do you go about doing that?
I try to treat every horse like he's going to win the Kentucky Derby or the Oaks.
Really?
Or the Breeders' Cup. And until they prove otherwise, that's the way I look at it. And if you talk to any of my assistants, they will tell you that I don't give up. I won't say his name, but he said, I can still remember at Saratoga, and we're here with Sir Winston, and I'm thinking, why do you have this horse here? You know,
yeah.
Like he was questioning because he didn't think he had any ability. And I can tell you one after another, horses that early on in their careers, Catch a Glimpse was another example. Early on, there was some question whether she was any good or this or that, and I don't give up easy. David Carroll will tell you that. He's another one, and I think out of the box a lot of times. I mean, I don't know. I just don't give up, and I try all different things.
People will see you at the races in the afternoon, and they'll see you in the winner's circle. They'll see you out at the racetrack in the morning like we are right now, and you're watching your horses train. But it sounds to me like this is more of a, as much as it is about the physical side of things with the horses, it's more of a thinking man's game for you. Is that a right way to put it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my dad, you know, before he passed away, always said, Mark, if it doesn't win him, Mark knows nothing about it. Somebody last year asked me, who do you like in the Super Bowl? And I said, well, who's in the Super Bowl? If you spend the day with Mark Cassey, you would see me look at 50 to 75 videos of horses training, jogging, galloping. You would see my computer open to 5 or 6 condition books. And also, I have a large chart that I can pretty well go back and tell you what the horse has done for their entire career every day. And you'll also see me plotting races, how to get to one place to another. And the horse may be in South Florida. Well, recently we had a horse win at Belmont, Chuchina. I ran him in South Florida, and I said to Mr. Disney, I said, this horse can win at Belmont. And we shipped him to Belmont, and he won the other day at Belmont. So I kind of look at the entire picture. So I am a, you know, it's I spend hours and hours. My wife will tell you that. So what will happen today, I'm watching horses train. I'll go back. We've got a hotel, and for the next 3 or 4 hours, I'll go over charts and everything, and it'll take me most of the afternoon.
How do you balance the time you spend with your profession and the time that you need to spend with those in your personal life?
Luckily, my personal life, my wife is a big part of it. So she understands it, and she spends a lot of time with me. And, you know.
But you're at ball games for your kids,
yeah.
And you spend time away from racing, too. How do you do it?
You may come to a ball game. I'm trying to think who it was. Oh, I think it was Wonder Gadot was running in the stake at Oaklawn,
mm-hmm.
And my son was getting ready to play baseball, and I also do the scoreboard. And I said, we're going to have to delay the national anthem for 5 minutes. I said, I don't care what you do. I said, I got to watch Wonder Gadot run. I said, so we have to delay the national anthem and the start of the game for 5 minutes. Luckily, I have a fair amount of pull in a lot of places, so I can get some things done. So, yeah, that was funny. I went around the corner of the concession stand and was watching the Wonder Gadot run, and then I said, okay. I came back. I said, we can do the national anthem now.
Play ball.
Yeah. So, you'll see me. You may see me with my my earphones on or watching a race and watching the baseball game at the same time. I would say, you know, we probably run, we'll start somewhere over 1,000 starts a year, and I would bet that I would maybe miss 5 races of those 1,000.
Okay.
And that usually would be on a plane that doesn't have internet service. I actually plan my flying a lot of times around where I can, so I don't miss races.
Sure.
Or, yeah.
Mark Cassie here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Let's turn our attention to what's going to happen at Woodbine this weekend in the Queen's Plate. You're going to be in search of a third victory in Canada's version of the Kentucky Derby. You're first with a horse that's not a filly.
I know. I was just going to say that. We're going to try to win one this time with a colt.
Yeah, it's so much luck with the ladies in the past, but the two horses you have this year, they're pretty talented, Skywire and Federal Law. Tell me a little bit about them.
They're two different horses. Federal Law, we're still, you know, the puzzle I was talking about, we're still playing with the pieces there. We're not exactly sure how they fit. We've tried a couple different running styles, and they haven't been as successful as I would have liked, so we're going to try a different one. I think his best chance and only chance to win is for him to rate a little bit and come running. Skywire's a little bit more, he's been done pretty well everything we've asked of him. He's ran hard, he runs well, and I think both, I love the way both of them trained this morning. I think they're both going to be factors.
When you hear the words Queen's Plate, what are some of the things that immediately come to mind for you?
Well, again, you know, I've been a racing fan since I was a little boy, so I've known about the Queen's Plate since I was 5 or 6. In Canada, the Queen's Plate is everything. I mean, it's if you go around North America and somebody says, you're a horse trainer, have you ever won the Kentucky Derby? If you're in Canada and somebody, you say you're a horse trainer, they ask, have you ever won the Queen's Plate?
Really?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, it's the tradition is unbelievable. So, like I said, if we get a weanling Canadian bred, I'm thinking about the Queen's Plate.
Yeah. Is there a difference in any way? To maybe a different feeling, a different vibe to winning an American classic as opposed to a Canadian classic?
They're both, I mean, they're different, but they're not different. You've both, either case, you've achieved the pinnacle of that country's racing, you know, so it feels good either way.
You talked earlier about being a strategist and loving the strategy part of this game. Talk about your strategy with getting these two horses to the Queen's Plate on Saturday.
Well, again, like I said, when we got Skywire, when I got Federal Law, the first thing we said, well, okay, we're going to aim them for the Queen's Plate. There's always, you know, bumps in the road. There's always changes. But I would say with Skywire, especially, he's done everything to this point. He's right. It's kind of been the plan. Federal Law's kind of shot around on me because he doesn't show, you know, he runs different type of races. So I think both horses, all you can ask for is to be the best you can be on that day. And I think we're both there. So now it's up to them.
Well, it's not only been a good run for you over the course of the last year. It's been a good run for your son, Norman, who went out on his own, too. And a week after the Belmont at Churchill Downs, he gets his first stakes victory as a trainer. It had to make you really proud.
Oh, I was so proud, you know, and then to do it for Miss Mary Lou Whitney. I mean, it was unbelievable. Very proud. I'm proud of, you know, everything he's done, and you're only just seeing the beginning.
Why can he be a good horse trainer? What attributes does he have that can make him a good horse trainer?
Well, he's a hard worker. He's a smart, smart guy. He's a lot smarter than I am. And he loves what he's doing.
Will he spend as much time strategizing as you do?
Oh, I would say so.
Yeah?
I would say so. He's got a pretty wonderful wife, too. So that's they make a beautiful team, a great team, and... if they ever have any kids, they'll probably hate horse racing. But anyways, we'll see.
Listen, good luck on Saturday, and let's go get number three here in the Queen's Plate.
Well, we're going to be trying really hard. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, buddy. Great stuff from trainer Mark Cassie, the Canadian Hall of Famer, referring to Gabby Gaudette, by the way, Norm's wife. They do make a tremendous team, and we'll see if Mark can get his team together for another winner's circle picture after the Queen's Plate later today. It would be his third if he can pull it off. And my thanks to him for sitting down yesterday for that extended interview. And hope you enjoyed it here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Post time for the Queen's Plate, 5:36 Eastern. We'll remind you one more time before we get to our break and shift gears, talking about the racing on closing day at Churchill and heading to Gulfstream to talk about the Sum of the Speed. We'll remind you that the coverage this afternoon, 4 to 6 on Sirius XM 156. That's your home throughout North America for all the Queen's Plate coverage, Sirius XM 156. And, of course, you can stream us worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net, which means you can do it on your computer or your mobile device. You can Bluetooth us in your car. So no excuses. Tune in to the Queen's Plate later today, Sirius XM 156, and streaming at horseracingradio.net. We'll get to a break. We're going to come back and be joined by the Director of Communications at Churchill Downs. That's Darren Rogers. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Woodbine is now racing 4 days a week, every Wednesday night, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. This weekend, come out to celebrate the Queen's Plate Festival with music, entertainment, and great racing. The $1 million Queen's Plate, the first leg of Canada's Triple Crown, highlights a Saturday card which also features racing on the world-famous E.P. Taylor Turf Course, home of the longest stretch run in North America, and Woodbine's brand-new 7-furlong inner turf course. For more information, visit woodbine.com.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Penna here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonySteaksandSeafood.com.
Castleton Lions is proud to introduce precocious multiple graded stakes winner Protonico for the 2019 breeding season. A Son of Giants Causeway out of an AP Indy mare, Protonico rolled to a 12 3/4 length victory in his debut as a 2-year-old before taking the Grade 3 Smarty Jones and Grade 3 Discovery Handicap at 3, followed by an ultra game win in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba at Churchill Downs in his 4-year-old season. Protonico joins the Castleton Lions stallion roster that includes multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and Blue Blood sprinter Justin Phillip. Gio Ponti is the sire of Eclipse champion Dre Fong, Canadian Classic winner Sir Dudley Diggs, and stakes winners Miss Technicality and America's Tale. While Justin Phillip is represented by exciting stakes-winning filly Safe to Say and stakes place runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing. Protonico, Gio Ponti, and Justin Phillip standing at Castleton Lions.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lascano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And the field turns for home. It is Favorite Trick. The leaders, they come to mid-stretch. Under a hand ride beneath Pate, Favorite Trick. Now he says go, and Favorite Trick responds in an instant. He opens up by 3.5 lengths. Dawson's Legacy, the Canadian second, Souvenir Coffee third. Here is an undefeated champion. Trick, and he ran like a champion today, winning by 5 and a pair of long shots, finishing second and third. Dawson's Legacy and National Lore.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna and Jude Feld, the Baron and the Pontiff at Woodbine here in Toronto, getting ready for the Queen's Plate this afternoon. But there is racing throughout North America at other venues, and good racing at that. At Churchill Downs later this afternoon on their closing day program, they will host 3 stakes races, including the Grade 3 Bashford Manor for the 2-year-olds. And you just heard that rejoin clip of Favorite Trick, the eventual Horse of the Year in 1997, winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile that year. He also won the Bashford Manor on way to his undefeated campaign in that Horse of the Year season. He was trained by Patrick Byrne, who 22 years later, here in 2019, has another horse back in the Bashford Manor. That is number 6, Silent Malice. Bit of a different situation. Where his Favorite Trick was undefeated, Silent Malice has yet to win a race. And to tell us more about that race and the entire program, here is Darren Rogers, the Director of Communications at Churchill. Darren, good morning and happy closing day.
Yeah, good morning, Mike. Good morning, Jude. It's a beautiful day out here in Louisville. Should be temperatures in the 90s, and a great way to end the meet. And you know, in addition to the great racing action that we have today, you've got the force out of the single 6 jackpot. More than 327,000 is in the carryover pool. Because it's closing day, all monies must be paid out. So the most winners of 6 will sharing all those the extra coin, and that pot should swell north of $1 million. So an exciting day. Ben Huffman and the racing department at Churchill Downs have put together a really, really outstanding racing program. We've got full fields, and the final 6 races of the card are particularly strong. And you alluded to the Bashford Manor. That's a really good race. We've got George Parabon coming in from California with Phantom Boss, who drew the rail under Rafael Bejarano. And Rafael, by the way, got into town yesterday, rode the last race winner for Vicky Oliver, rode one winner, paid $14. And, you know, he's won more than 400 races at Churchill. That's where he cut his teeth. And anyway, this looks like the horse to beat. Son of Shackelford, of course, you know, his father loved the Churchill Downs surface while training here for Dale Romans. But it's a very intriguing field of 10 in the Bashford Manor.
Yeah, and of course, those horses, 2-year-olds, hoping to return to Churchill Downs next May. As a matter of fact, Darren, that Run for the Roses now only 308 days, 9 hours, 16 minutes, and 43 seconds away. So you better get busy.
I'm actually counting it down myself. Yeah. We're going to. You know what? I'm counting down these final 12 races of the spring meet.
I imagine so. You know, I don't want to say you're the hardest working guy in horse racing, but it wouldn't take long to call roll. Are you going to get any time off?
Oh yeah, no. I'm on hiatus a little bit. Oh yeah. In fact, I'm excited. We're gonna actually drive up to Saratoga for a week. My wife initiated this. She's never been to Saratoga, and she said, you know, you want to go spend a week up there? We'll take our son. And so I'm really looking forward to that. I can't believe my wife suggested we go to a racetrack on vacation. This is fabulous.
That's outstanding. What an awesome selection you made of a wife right there. That tells
right?
you right there.
Right?
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah, she's definitely a keeper, Darren. No doubt about it.
There's no question.
The race before the Bashford Manor, speaking of the ladies, is for the two-year-old fillies, and that's the debutante, and that's always a fun race as well, and part of a huge day on closing day.
Yeah, it is, and the debutante, you know, Steve Askins, he's won this race a number of times, but it's funny. He hasn't won it since 2007 with Rated Feisty, so that's a long time between drinks, but if you're looking at a single six sequence, it's really tough. I would single Magic Dance, who's the favorite in the debutante. I thought she was ultra impressive in her debut. Ricardo Santana is dynamite. There's a lot of speed in here. I think not a whole lot, but Cholo Lips adds the blinkers. Probably going to be out near the front from California for Mike Harrington. My Good Girl's got some speed. Down on the rail, Secretly Wicked's got speed. I could see Santana just tracking these horses, pouncing, and winning comfortably. I thought she was that impressive. So Magic Dance for Steve Asmussen would probably be my single in the single six. And by the way, again, a really, really tough sequence. You know, we also have the Kelly's Landing as race eight. That's the second leg. And How do they get away with this one? But you'll love this. We're going to scratch Warriors Club, the Churchill Downs Racing Club horse. He's going to scratch, and he's scratching in favor of the John Nayrud at Belmont Park. And I told Ben Huffman, you better not let Gary Palmisano off too easily scratching the house horse to run at another track. but they're doing that because they want to try and get the free ride into the Breeders' Cup winning year end. The horse is doing good, but Warriors Club is going to scratch, and he was the 5-2 favorite in here. I'm kind of leaning towards Petrov for Ron Moquette. Seems to be in good form, seems to be training well, been knocking on the door, and he's always been a hard knocker.
Yeah, the Kelly's Landing coming up as part of that huge closing day program. It's race number 8, 422 Eastern, the debutante, race 10 at 526, and the Bashford Manor at 559 as race 11. Darren, when you think back on the meet, of course, no Triple Crown winner this year. We did have that controversial decision in the Kentucky Derby, and the first disqualification in the history of the race has to be the signature moment of the entire spring meet, but I'm sure there were other moments that stood out to you.
Yeah, it's always hard. We were talking about it on our radio program last night. You know, immediately you think the Derby week, you know, right? If you're going to have a horse of the meet or a race of the meet, it's always going to be the Derby. Top three-year-old filly is always going to be the Oaks winner, et cetera. So I like to focus a little bit past Derby week. And, you know, I thought the race of the meet actually occurred last week. I absolutely loved that Rock Solana overnight stakes. And who would think you'd get a grade one winning mare and Mia Mischief. She, of course, won the Humana Distaff. You come back with Kofefi, a three-year-old filly taking Elders on after breaking the track record at Pimlico. And when the overnight comes out, you think, okay, well, surely one of the two is going to scratch because this race came out ultra tough. They both stayed in. They're both prepping for bigger things down the road at Saratoga. But they threw it down. I mean, they went brilliantly fast early, matched strides around the turn, all the way into the, you know, deep stretch. I think it was the final 50 yards that Mia Mischief put away Kofefi, and then Ostrak nailed Kofefi at the wire for second after she just got a little tired. But that, you know, very rarely do you see races, you know, live up to their billing and then deliver, and that was just fabulous. And it was a true indication of what we've been dealing with this entire spring meet. I mean, you know, we've had the record prize money, the that's, you know, fueled by the Derby City Gaming historical racing machines. We've had full fields. I think we're going to end up averaging close to 8.5 horses a race. We've had a safe meet. The competition on the track has just been sensational. Top jockeys, top trainers. You know, the way we're ending this 12-race program today really kind of typifies what we've been dealing with most of this spring meet. So it's been very rewarding. And by the way, you know, you offer prize money, horsemen come. When the horsemen flood the entry box, people bet. Business has been up. It's very, it's really been rewarding to see tremendous racing. And you know what? Ellis Park opens up tomorrow. They're going to be offering $330,000 a day. I think, you know, Kentucky's really on the move right now, really on the come. And I think they're poised and positioned for a tremendous meet to keep it going, because a lot of these guys are going to stick around rather than, you know, go up to Saratoga, because the money's so good right now here in Kentucky.
Yeah, well, Darren, congratulations to you and to Ben Huffman and to the entire team. It has been a phenomenal meet, and it comes to a close later this afternoon. Enjoy your time off. Safe travels to you and the family heading up to Saratoga. Enjoy the races up there. It'll be nice not to be working them, and we'll get a chance to catch up with you down the road, my friend.
I'll be in the backyard with the you know, maybe grabbing a cold brew out of Merrill Scherer's ice chest. I'm looking forward to it.
Perfect scheme right there.
I've been there. I've been to that ice chest before. It's a great place to watch the races, or at least, well, forget about watching the races. It's just a great place.
It is.
All right, boys. Darren, appreciate it, brother. Play. All right, thanks, pal. Bye. Darren Rogers here on HRRN. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, he will receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. Acacia Courtney, live from Gulfstream. She's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Breeders' Cup.
Good Magic, the champion son of champion sire Curlin, standing at Hillendale.
Good Magic's going to win his first race, and he's going to do it in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Good Magic earned championship honors following his victory in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at 2 and recorded another Grade 1 win in the Haskell Invitational in his 3-year-old season, retiring with more than $2.9 million in earnings. Champion Good Magic, standing at Hillendale.
Adina Spring Stallion Mucho Macho Man is a sire in the making.
Mucho Macho Man! He did it over Will Take Charge!
The number one second crop sire by 2019 stakes winners looks to heat up even more this summer with Grade 1 place Mucho Gusto, now a 4-time graded stakes winner and pointing toward the $1 million Haskell Invitational.
Mucho Gusto means business in the Affirm Stakes, and he's clear by 3.
Cal Cup Oaks winner Mucho Unusual now has earnings over $250,000 and is targeting a return to stakes company at Del Mar.
And this is going to be an authoritative score for Mucho Unusual, all the way in the Cal Cup Oaks.
And he's a macho man, a contender for the $1 million Queens Plate at Woodbine June 29th. Plus, recent maiden special winners in Florida and New York by a combined 18 and a quarter lengths. Adina Spring Stallion Mucho Macho Man. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
Warfront, a leading sire on all surfaces and all fronts. His recent Grade 1 winners include Omaha Beach, Homesman, Fog of War, Lancaster Bomber, and European champion U.S. Navy Flag. Plus, Preakness Stakes winner War of Will. And these recent group and graded winners. Sire of the highest price yearling sold in North America in 2018, this son of Danzig continues to dominate both on the track and in the sales room. Warfront, standing at Claiborne Park.
The National HPPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HPPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HPPA is doing for you. Alternation, sire of Serengeti Empress, winner of this year's Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks.
Serengeti Empress
has taken the Kentucky Oaks.
From his first two crops, Alternation has produced 9 black type horses and 5 black type winners with more than $4.7 million in earnings. 79% of his runners have won or placed, and Alternation is among the leaders of his crop with average earnings per runner of over $42,000. Alternation, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Mike Penna, Jude Feld, back with you on the Equine Forum, rolling on, final segment of the show. If you missed any portion, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast. Interviews with Sandy Hawley, Jim Lawson, feature on Josie Carroll, Mark Cassie, and Darren Rogers, all part of a stellar 2 hours so far. We've covered a lot of ground, and going to cover some more with our next guest, who is the lovely and talented Miss Connecticut USA. That is Acacia Courtney, and she was part of our broadcast team here at the Queen's Plate last year. She can't do that this year because she's working the television side of things for Gulfstream Park and the Summit of Speed program. Acacia is with us now. Acacia, good morning, and happy Summit of Speed Day.
Good morning, guys. Thanks so much for having me on. And yes, Summit of Speed, we're excited about the races. Unfortunately, it is a little bit rainy here in South Florida today. So we did just get word that all races are off the turf. So we're redoing a few things this morning, but still a good 14 race card and a couple of nice stakes coming up later, including Princess Rooney, of course, Breeders' Cup winning your in race.
I told you should have told Gulfstream to go jump in a lake when they asked you to work with them. It's sunny and like 77 here.
Oh, see, last year when I was at the Queen's Plate, we were all sweating.
You would be sweating here again. It's going to be a warm day. I can guarantee you.
You
have your choice.
It's really, really cool.
You can be wet or you can be sweating.
There you go. Either
well,
way.
Acacia, we miss having you here. We know that it's still going to be a great day of racing despite the inclement weather and the off-the-turf conditions. You do have that Grade 2 Princess Rooney, which is the winning you're in for the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint Division, $250,000, a field of 7, at least now set to go to the post. Have there been any changes from that race because of the conditions?
Not the Princess Rooney, no. That's 7 furlongs on the main track. So as of now, no changes in either of the graded stakes. Of course, there was the Bob Umfrey turf sprint on the card. That's off the turf, so the headliner in that race Pay Any Price is out. But as far as the graded stakes, those still did hold together, which is great. And Stormy Embrace, of course, the one to beat. And she's won on an off track before. She won the Musical Romance last year on a sloppy track. And she's just been so sharp lately, and I spoke to Kathleen O'Connell earlier this week, and she said a trip to the Breeders' Cup is definitely in the cards for this mare should she punch her ticket today. So they're really looking forward to taking another stab with this horse who's just been so consistent.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunate that the Bob Umfrey came off. Bob was a good friend, and I know how much he was involved in developing the Summit of Speed, but the two graded stakes are just outstanding today.
Yeah.
There's a couple of the favorites that maybe don't have good off-track form. Do we have any insights there?
Well, as far as the Princess Rooney goes, like I said, I think Stormy Embrace should be just fine. I think as far as the Smile, which is the other graded stake on the day, that's race 13 this afternoon. Jalen Journey, I think, is the one that we're all really looking forward to seeing. He's never run on an off track before, and he's really kind of, I think, a wild card because he's stepping up into graded stakes company for the first time. So we're really wondering, what are we going to get from him? I think Diamond Oops is actually a little bit of an interesting horse in there. I ended up using him in my top three. Julian Leperoux in Town to Ride, he's going to be riding him for Patrick Biancone. Luis Sias is going to be on Jalen Journey. So we have some of the big jocks in town today to ride in some of these races. And maybe Diamond Oops, who won the Buffalo Man on a wet track last year. He's definitely had some spotty form, but he's faced good horses. I mean, he was running on the turf in his last couple, and he ran into Pay Any Price in World of Trouble. So some decent company he's been running against. So maybe he's one that'll move forward on a wet track. We just don't really know what we're going to get from Jalen Journey because he's never done this before. So I'm looking forward to getting a look at him in the paddock before the race.
Yeah, Diamond Oops, 20-1 on the morning line with Julian Leperoux. And if he does run back to that victory in the Buffalo Man over the sloppy track that you mentioned, Acacia, he's a horse that figures to be right there and maybe even one of the horses to beat with a repeat performance. But that could be asking a lot. But he does like the slop. Yeah. And as you said, Jalen Journey, 3-for-4, first stakes race of his career coming up later today. But he has been nothing short of spectacular in his last three races since moving over to Kathleen O'Connell.
He's been really impressive, and Kathleen started the weekend off well yesterday with a stakes win with a nice two-year-old filly and Lindsay's Lucky Lady, so she's definitely loaded today. She also has a couple of other big horses on the card this afternoon, including Stormy Embrace, who's looking to defend her title, and like I said, I got a chance to go to the barn. She's based over at Gulfstream Park West and talk to her the other morning and just kind of go down the shed row and see what was going on. And well-defined is an interesting one. He's in the carry back, which is a little bit earlier in the card. Louis Sy is aboard him as well. He's the Sam F. Davis winner, but he's turning back in distance to the 7 furlongs. And he's one that I think he definitely has the class, but I think he might be a little bit vulnerable. Turning back in distance, off a little bit of a freshening. Kathleen even told me she prefers him going a bit longer than what he's going to get today in the sprint. So I actually like Union's Destiny in there. As funny as it is with a horse by Union Rags, I think the kind of elongated 7-furlong sprint's going to be really good for him. And he's run well on a wet track, finishing 3rd in stakes company at Monmouth last time out. And I think he'll be okay and perhaps a nice price in the carry back. That's 3-6.
When that racetrack gets wet at Gulfstream Park, Acacia, have you noticed throughout the meet, are there any tendencies or trends or biases that tend to emerge as that racetrack continues to get water on it?
You know, they really do a great job with it. And as Ron Nicoletti always says, if you don't like the weather in Florida, just wait 10 minutes and it'll change. So it's definitely possible we'll get some sun. We'll see the track upgraded a little bit later. But we did have a little bit of rain yesterday. And I've noticed in general, horses tend to stay off of the rail, which really, you know, makes a lot of sense. It might be a little bit deeper in there. You'll see horses either... It usually goes one of two ways. Either you'll see horses just get comfortable on the front end as they're not having to deal with any sort of the wet track kickback, or by virtue of staying a little bit off of the rail, they'll be able to close outside. So that's something to keep an eye on through the first couple of races. But in general, I've seen horses tend to stay off of the rail, and as is usually the case, the cleaner ones at the end of the race tend to have a little bit of an easier trip.
Yeah, so your best advice would be to be an observer the first few races and not go too heavy until you figure out exactly the way the track's playing.
Oh, for sure. And we have a lot of sprint races today, and of course, a lot of those 7-furlong races coming out of the chute. It's tougher being inside anyway, so maybe some of the horses drawn a little bit more outside, able to get some position a little bit better, get to the best part of the racetrack. That might be something to look at as well.
Acacia, did I read where the Rainbow Six was actually hit for the big jackpot yesterday?
It was hit on Thursday for
$3.1 million,
I believe, yes. So the mandatory payout is still going to be tomorrow on Sunday. We have a carryover of a little bit more than $12,000 today in the Rainbow Six pool. It started to build yesterday, but it will still be mandatory payout tomorrow at the end of the fiscal year, if you will, here at Gulfstream, end of the meet. But somebody was very lucky with one horse alive for the entire pool trying to turf for the first time on Thursday, and it all went down.
How full was the bar with management on Thursday night?
I would think pretty full.
Yeah, you're always hoping for that big carryover going into the mandatory payout day, right? It makes it intriguing for bettors, and you know, certainly helps the handle as well. But off track for the running of the Summit of Speed program off the turf right now at Gulfstream, as Acacia alluded to. Acacia, as I told you, beautiful here at Woodbine, temperatures in the upper 70s. It'll be a gorgeous afternoon for thoroughbred racing. Gates open here at noon, the Queen's Plate, 5:36 Eastern. And as I touched on at the top of the interview, you were with us last year for the coverage. Mm-hmm. Have you even had any time to take a look at the Queen's Plate today or no?
A little bit. I admit I haven't fully handicapped it, but I have taken a look because it is such a special day of racing. And I think one of the biggest things to see last year was getting a chance to really be there and to see it in person, because it really is such a neat spectacle. And just seeing the overall vibe from the fashion to the races to the welcome that the track really gives you. It's really special, and you feel how exciting it is once you're there. You feel the atmosphere on track. So that was, it's definitely a highlight for me, having been able to be there. I know in the race today, Tone Broke is going to have a lot of eyes on him with King for a Day. I got a chance to see those two in the Sir Barton at Pimlico on the Preakness undercard about a month ago. And then, of course, King for a Day coming back to beat Maximum Security. So I know he's probably going to have a little bit of a target on his back, but it should be interesting. And I know we talked a lot last year about how well the girls seem to do in here, whether it's the fillies themselves or the trainers, and Josie Carroll with the V-Splatter. I think I'll definitely be cheering for him on the outside. It's been very impressive.
There you go. The lovely and talented Acacia Courtney here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Acacia, listen, enjoy the day down there at Gulfstream. Try to stay dry, and really appreciate the visit here this morning.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Good luck today.
All right. Like all of our guests, Acacia will receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. We're back to wrap it up right after this on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Record prize money for horsemen and great racing highlight the 145th spring meet at Churchill Downs. Churchill will be offering more than $30 million in total purses, an increase of nearly $8 million over 2018, with $12 million in stakes purses and $18 million in overnight races. Maiden races during the spring meet will be worth $85,000, up from $53,000 last year, and allowance purses will range from $87,000 to $94,000. Record prize money and great racing this spring at Churchill Downs.
Springtime tips and fun facts from Paul, Kristen, and Dexter at Total Wine & More.
Did you know there were over 1 million bubbles in a glass of champagne? Did someone say brunch?
Wine is made in virtually every country in the world, and I'm ready to give you a tour to find the right one.
Ham's sweet and salty richness pairs perfectly with a juicy Pinot Noir.
Now with two locations in Lexington. Visit our newest store in Hamburg, off Sir Barton Way. Shop online at TotalWine.com. The selection is ridiculous. Cheers!
Airdrie Stud's Summer Front is poised to skyrocket to national sire prominence with his first crop of two-year-olds in 2019. A multiple stakes winner at two, this talented son of Warfront went on to win her place in 12 graded stakes with lifetime earnings of more than $1 million. With an explosive turn of foot, Summer Front routinely recorded times of a mile and 33 in some of the best grade one mile races in the country and possesses everything it takes to be an important sire for years to come. Airdrie Stud's Summer Front. Think about it.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere, or visit centralequipment.com.
Power.
Anchor Down has the lead as they turn for home. Anchor Down in front by three. Anchor Down has built a five-length lead with just a 16th to the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion.
Anchor Down is still there coming to the 16th pull. Tamar Coes can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainsway Stallion Anchor Down, a son of three-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 132 and 4 fifths, posting a 108 buyer speed figure. A half to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu. Anchor Down strongly resembles his sire and will be represented by his first crop of yearlings this year. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
I like the beats bringing us back here for the closing segment, JT.
Yeah. A little jazz action is always good.
We should have come back to, like, the Maple Leaf Forever.
How about the Maple Leaf Rag?
The what?
The Maple Leaf Rag.
What is that?
That's like a, what would you call that? Like New Orleans jazz?
Really?
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
Oh, well.
Not surprising. If it's not George Trade or Motley Crue, I probably don't have any idea of knowing who
that
is.
I got you with those two guys, and I got Anthony with New Kids on the Block. This is my life.
Yeah, that's true. Well, listen, we want to thank all of our guests for being with us here on this Queens Plate edition of the Equine Forum this morning. Sandy Hawley, the Hall of Famer who sat down for that interview with former jockey Jerry Olguin. Jim Lawson, the CEO here at Woodbine. Mark Cassie. Darren Rogers from Churchill Downs and Acacia Courtney just a short time ago from Gulfstream Park. It's been a busy 2 hours. Hope you enjoyed it. We're back this afternoon, 4 o'clock Eastern Time, with that exclusive radio coverage of the Queen's Plate. It's presented by Hillendale Farms and TwinSpires.com. And you can tune in on SiriusXM 156 and stream us worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Going to be a tremendous afternoon, JT.
Yep, really looking forward to it.
Who's your Queen's Plate pick, by the way?
Oh, I like Tone Broke.
Ooh, what about Skywire, our draft pick?
I like him, too. I'm going to box him in the exact.
All right, our thanks to our producers, Lee Delapina and Chanel Cacho, back in our Jimmy John's of Lexington studio. Sean C., handling all the social media for us. And for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We're back this afternoon for Eastern. Oh, yeah, my beautiful wife, Michelle. Thanks, Michelle. See ya.